This is John Middlecoff from 3 and Out with John Middlecoff. Superchargers, headlights, and more. With over 122 million parts, eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Stay on your A game with all the parts you need at the prices you want. It's easy to bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's gotta be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.
Week one was wild. Let's talk to the pros. Hello, everybody. Welcome into another episode of the Fantasy Pros Football Podcast. I am Ryan Wormley, and joining me on the Sunday night recap edition is Matthew Friedman, the Oracle, and Deepak Chona, our resident injury expert. Matt, everybody knows who you are already, so I'm going to throw it to Deepak. Deepak, can you introduce yourself to our audience and let them know sort of where you're coming from and what sort of advice you're going to be giving us this season?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for the intro. As you said, Deepak Chona, background in orthopedic surgery and sports medicine training from Stanford and Harvard. So I've been working hard on putting together injury databases and trying to really be advanced about how we study returns and figure out who's going to come back and when, how they're going to perform. And that's what I'm here to do, talk injury with you guys today.
So Matt, did you hear what I heard, which is that he is much smarter than both of us?
That's not what I heard, but I acknowledge that he is smart. I would say that we are smarter than you. I'm just joking, but no, obviously he's a smart guy and it's awesome to have him on the show with his really incredible knowledge base.
There was 0% chance that Friedman would ever admit anybody is smarter than him. That is not a surprise. For everybody watching this show live on YouTube, thank you. We will be here every Sunday night around 7:45 Eastern all season long. If you're watching us here on youtube.com/fantasypros, please give us a like and be sure to subscribe to help us out. If you enjoy our content, click the bell, get notifications for all of our latest podcasts, short videos, live streams, etc. And for the folks listening on the podcast version, don't forget we are live each and every Sunday night, so you can watch us along with every other Fantasy Pros podcast over on our YouTube channel. Again, that's youtube.com/fantasypros. Unsurprisingly, it was a wild, chaotic week one. I think we all expected it. Every week in the NFL is chaotic in its own way, but this one felt especially so. So we're going to jump right into an injury roundup with Deepak. The first player I want to hit on, one of the best wide receivers in fantasy and in the NFL, T. Higgins. Deepak, he left with a concussion. How concerned are you for his long-term outlook here?
Yeah, long-term, not terribly so. The short-term is really the thing here. Average concussion timeline takes 7 to 10 days since the new protocols have been instituted. Depends a little on severity. When they do come back, the good news is wide receivers tend to bounce right back to their pre-injury production. Not really a lag time there, but and there's not a major recurrence risk. But again, 1 to 2 weeks is usually what we're looking at.
Friedman, if Higgins is going to miss a game or two, are you particularly excited about Tyler Boyd, or are you not really moving anybody up into that spot of the guys you'd be starting on the offense?
Yeah, the offense as a whole would drop just a little bit, but not all that much. And most of the production would be split between Jefferson and Tyler Boyd. It's not as if I'm looking at the number three, like the new number three receiver on the team. But Tyler Boyd obviously would get a big boost up. Chase, he would obviously get a boost up as well. But I mean, like, he's already a top two wide receiver. Like, how far can you move him up?
I didn't want to correct you because you're so much smarter than me, but yes, you did have the wrong LSU receiver there. Briefly, let's talk about a guy in the late afternoon slate, Keenan Allen. He left with a hamstring injury, originally was ruled questionable, then he was ruled out, did not return to the game. Deepak, hamstrings, I know, can be nagging. I've had hamstrings injuries, and I'm not even a professional athlete. Is this something that can be a multi-week thing also?
Yeah, probably is a multi-week thing. The average hamstring for wide receivers takes about 3 weeks. They vary about a week on either side of that. He'll probably get an MRI tomorrow. Then we'll know a little bit more information and what severity we're dealing with. Good news is that when they come back, wide receivers are close to their pre-injury form, usually about 90%. The bad news is that there is a real recurrence risk for those first few weeks back. It's about a 20% rate that they re-injure and re-aggravate. And we've seen that with Julio Jones really costing him some time in previous years. So we'll know a little more probably tomorrow after MRI.
And that 20% recurrence rate, that's specifically for receivers?
It's for receivers and running backs, skill position players.
Okay, so hopefully it doesn't last too long, but that could be one to keep an eye on going forward there. Friedman, I mean, Mike Williams didn't do much of anything today. I think we would hope that he would do more in future weeks if Allen was out.
Yeah, I mean, shooting from the hip would be like, oh, Mike Williams locked in top 12 wide receiver. But we really need to look at the target distribution that they're using within this offense moving forward. Because it was, even with Keenan Allen out, it was all over the place. Deontay Carter, Gerald Everett, Austin Eckler, all of those guys were getting roughly the same number of targets. So that is concerning, but I still think Mike Williams predominates in this offense and ends up being the guy.
Patriots quarterback Mac Jones got an MRI on his back after week one. It did come back negative, so that's good news for his health outlook. But Deepak, how concerning is it to have a back injury for a quarterback who has to be somewhat mobile and, you know, torque and all that stuff?
Yeah, so the good news is, as you kind of alluded to, Mac Jones, not the most mobile guy in the world. So he's mostly going to be sitting in that pocket. You know, negative x-rays means most commonly you're looking at like a muscle strain or a ligament sprain. Either way, the majority of those in the lower back can be played through. So we may see a little bit of hobbled Mac Jones, but probably not missing time. Again, we don't have a lot of information because this is Bill Belichick's team, but we'll make do with what we have. And I would say probably not missing time.
Friedman, you have in the notes that if Mac does miss time somehow or is limited, then we might see them run more, but they already run kind of a lot.
I know it's they might run even more, but that offense would likely be worse. So they would be running for like no reason at all. So if Mac Jones is out, like the offense doesn't look all that good with him, but if he's out, then it feels like this offense is just really bad and you can't touch anyone in it.
Another major injury from today wasn't for an offensive player, so it's not the type of guy that we would normally care much about on a fantasy show, but he's one of the superstars of the league. I'm talking about TJ Watt. It appears by all accounts that it's a torn pec. It hasn't been, you know, announced officially yet or anything, at least that I've seen as of the time of this show, but he was saying it. You could see video of it as he was coming off the field. Oh, I tore my pec. It seems like that's what the reporters are saying is probably the case. So if he's out for the year, is this something that you think Deepak is like a torn pec that's going to affect him in future years? What's the recovery timeline for something like that?
Yeah, so the fact that they are saying torn pec, usually you can tell just by looking and feeling on exam without an MRI. They'll get the MRI, that'll confirm things. And usually that means surgery in these cases. So that generally takes 3 to 4 months to come back for most players. But his brother, JJ Watt, actually got hurt week 8 and then came back that same season for the playoffs. So I would expect TJ Watt to try to be on a similar protocol. So somewhere around 10 weeks in December as a potential return. But in the short term, that's going to be a hard injury for him to deal with in this season. In the long term, he's probably going to be just fine, recover most of his strength there. But again, JJ Watt's really the only guy we have to point to who has come back early from that.
Friedman, the Steelers defense is one of those defenses that usually goes relatively high in drafts every year just because of the name brand and because they do have a lot of good players like Watt. Does this affect how you look at maybe like running backs or quarterbacks going against the Steelers, or does this affect how you look at the Steelers as a defense that you would consider starting?
Yeah, all of it. So they are more exploitable, for other offenses. You don't want to start them as much in defense because they can't get after the quarterback, so they're not going to get as many sacks. And then also their own offense, I think it hurts them as well because they can't get the ball back as much. So I think it hurts the running backs, especially. They're less likely to play with the lead, less likely to have positive game script. So I think it hurts the whole team.
Let's touch on some guys who were injured previously, didn't get injured this week. And one who we have good news on is James Robinson, because he looks really fantastic just from the eye test, at least compared to what I expected, especially seeing Cam Akers coming back from the Achilles and not looking so good on Thursday night, seeing a different running back coming back from the Achilles and looking relatively excellent, or at least relatively normal, I think was pretty encouraging. Deepak, is this timeline particularly fast? Are you surprised by this from Robinson?
Yeah, Robinson's definitely a positive outlier here by a lot. The Achilles, historically brutal for running backs. So early return from Achilles, he's around 8 months now. It doesn't really carry a high re-injury risk. So what the real limitation is usually strength, and with that, explosiveness and production. So the fact that he's out there looking pretty good, I think we're safe to put him back in lineups as a sort of plug-and-play guy for now. And I'm, you know, looking forward to using him.
Is there any, like, you know, concern about re-injury here with as fast as he came back, or sort of all systems go?
It's more so usually all systems go. It's usually, again, not re-injury risks. It's more so like limitations in the strength and production that they can put up, like you're seeing with Cam Akers right now.
Friedman, are you moving Robinson up the rankings?
Yeah, I mean, you have to. He looked very good, especially in comparison to what we saw out of Cam Akers on Thursday Night Football. So definitely moving up the rankings. The thing is, he's in a mediocre offense and he's still in a split backfield, but at worst, he's flexible.
Last guy I want to touch on, who again was injured previously, J.K. Dobbins. He did not play today. It was a whole big thing with him going back and forth with the national media about, oh, I'm going to be ready for week one. Don't you, you know, worry about it. And then he wasn't. Lamar has had comments where it seems like it's going to be a couple of weeks. Oh, yeah, we'll get him back a few weeks from now. I'm not sure the exact timeline on that. The Ravens obviously weren't particularly good on the ground today without him. Deepak, do you think Dobbins, just based on everything we know about the timeline, could be back next week? And what sort of level do you think he'll be at when he does return?
Yeah, so what we learned is we can't really trust Dobbins in all of this. I'd expect to see him starting somewhere around week three, but on a limited snap count. And not necessarily factoring in the Ravens' offensive fit and their line and running issues. But overall, you're probably looking at a solid player by about mid-season. We have a database that's sort of based on historical data plus machine learning and player demographics. And it projects 85% of his pre-injury explosiveness coming back around mid-season this year. So that's a pretty solid player considering what he was, 6 yards per carry pre-injury. But they're also probably not going to be letting him run without snap counts for the first 6 or so weeks of this season.
Friedman, is this backfield a stay away until he's back? Or are you going to take another chance on a Davis or a Drake in future weeks before he's back?
No, this feels pretty horrible. They had a nice matchup. They were leading for most of the game against the Jets. And it was a split backfield. Kenyon Drake with 11 carries. Mike Davis and Justice Hill both got 2 carries. None of them really did anything with it. And, you know, based on what Deepak is saying, even when J.K. Dobbins comes back, likely he's not going to be his full self for a little bit, and also likely that he's on something of a snap count, which, you know, makes him, I think, a pretty risky play. Even though he's got upside in that offense, points are going to be scored in that offense, I still think it makes him a little bit risky. So this entire backfield feels pretty dangerous right now.
Some other injuries of the day, just to quickly mention, Najee Harris, by all accounts from the reporters after the game, it looked worse than it was when he left late in the fourth quarter with a foot injury. He should be fine. Elijah Mitchell, which I don't really want to get into because we don't know a lot yet. He had a brace when he was leaving the locker room, but it's not really clear if there's any sort of timeline here or what the long-term outlook might be, so we'll wait on that to address it later. Packers guard John Runyon was out with a concussion. Wandale Robinson left with a knee injury. The Ravens lost Kyle Fuller. It looked really bad. In fact, CBS Sports said they weren't even going to go back and show the replay during the game. John Harbaugh did say after the game that there might not be as much pessimism. They're going to have to wait and see how it looks tomorrow. Juwan James, also the Ravens, did re-tear the same Achilles that he had torn previously. So he is out and almost assuredly out for the year. He is Deepak Chona. Thank you so much for joining us, Deepak. We will have you back every week, assuming you are still willing to come hang out with us for a few minutes every Sunday night to talk a little injuries. Thank you so much for joining us. And everybody stick around. We will be right back. Want to dominate your fantasy football leagues? Well, then you need My Playbook, available only from Fantasy Pros. Struggling with the waiver wire? My Playbook lets you see who the top available players are week to week. Can't decide who to start? Compare your players side by side with detailed breakdowns and projections for each week of your fantasy season. And it's all free when you're a premium subscriber to Fantasy Pros. So sign up today at fantasypros.com or download the My Playbook app to your Apple or Android device. Welcome back to the show, Freedom, and just you and me for the rest of the show. I hope you can stand it, having to talk back and forth with me for a half hour. I know it's something that you've never had to do before.
A half hour? That sounds like a long time.
Roughly, a half hour total. Well, we'll go as long as we go. Let's get to our headlines of the day. The first one, Aaron Rodgers stunk today. He went, 22 of 34, 195 yards, no touchdown, an interception. He had one rush for -1 yards. He was really bad. I'll sort of let you take it from there.
I mean, what do we say? He had, I think, the worst fantasy performance, if not the worst fantasy performance of any quarterback on the slate, the worst aesthetic performance, and like the worst performance out of anyone who had a really decent chance of being in your starting lineup. Like this was horrifying to see what was happening. He was under pressure all day long. I guess that's what happens when your two starting tackles are missing. And then John Runyon also left the game. So it was really bad on the offensive line for him. He was also missing his number one wide receiver, Alan Lazard. But I'm going to say, like, he had, some professional wide receivers out there with him, and Sammy Watkins and Randall Cobb. You might, say those guys are washed, and maybe they are, but, Watkins is never going to be healthier than he is now. And Randall Cobb at least has, chemistry with Rodgers, knowledge of the system, and neither one could really do anything there. This was a running back focused game. I will say, I don't want to overreact too much to this, as bad as it looked. We should just remember a year ago in week one, the Packers looked absolutely awful when they got destroyed by the Saints. And then they still ended up, finishing with the number one seed. So this might just be like a week one thing in the LaFleur system. Maybe the team is never ready, and then they bounce back in week two. So I'm not overreacting to this, but this definitely is something that we need to monitor.
I assume when you said that it was the worst aesthetic performance of any quarterback, you meant his terrible haircut, right?
I'm not one who should comment on anyone's hair, so I'm not going to, but except for your hair, it looks wonderful, by the way.
Well, I'm way past due for a haircut, so I guess I probably shouldn't, throw stones in glass houses. Looking on the other side of this game, much more positive, like Justin Jefferson. I mean, he was going as wide receiver one in a lot of drafts. It was between him and Cup, maybe Chase if you were especially bullish, but he looked every bit like a wide receiver one overall, an overall number one type of player coming off of this game. He had 11 targets, 9 catches, 184 yards, and 2 touchdowns. Just a beast.
Yeah. What was amazing was that it felt like they weren't going out of their way on the Vikings to target Jefferson. But only 11 targets, which is still a lot, but 11 out of 32. It's not as if that's like Devontae Adams level, what we were seeing last year. He was getting that production within the normal flow of the offense functioning. Like, what happens if they actually bump up his target volume a little bit more because he's being so efficient? And we should note that this production came against a very good secondary in the Packers. Like, it's not as if they were doing this against, insert bad team here, like the Houston Texans or something. Like, this was coming against legit defenders and within division. So defenders who know these wide receivers. And so this was an amazing performance, I think. And, after what we saw out of Cooper Kupp on Thursday Night Football, I was thinking it would take a lot from someone to be able to jump over Cooper Kupp to routinely rank them as the wide receiver one on a weekly basis in fantasy. But man, Justin Jefferson definitely made a case in this game. And I'm not saying that next week, he's the automatic wide receiver one, but it's enough to where matchup might determine between Kupp and Jefferson in any given week who ends up being ranked at the top.
Yeah, if this is what he looks like naturally in a Kevin O'Connell offense, please sign me up for more of that all season long. Another guy who absolutely crushed today was DeAndre Swift. I wish he got more than 15 carries.
I know. It really is interesting because he looked great. Obviously, the 15 carries, which he leveraged into 144 yards and a touchdown, 3 targets, 3 receptions, 31 yards. Those numbers are all great. They're also, I wouldn't say misleading, but they're not as good as they could have been. He played 46 snaps to 22 snaps for Jamal Williams, 31 early downs to 17 for Jamal Williams. So he was the lead back, But Williams was taking a pretty decent slice of the pie, and he was taking the money carries. Jamal Williams had 4 goal line carries to just 1 for DeAndre Swift. So as great as he is, honestly, this might be an opportunity to sell high. And it's not like I want to sell DeAndre Swift because he's an awesome player. But given how involved Jamal Williams is in that offense, like, we cannot consistently count on DeAndre Swift to get the goal line touches. And Jamal Williams is still out there getting some receiving work too. So if I could sell high on Swift, I would explore that option.
Yeah, you know, you put that in the notes about trading high, and it's just, it's disappointing because you saw everything you wanted to see except those extra money touches. So I definitely get it. Our last headline of the day, obviously partially a joke, but Taysom Hill, is he for real? I will let you take it from there.
I mean, I just remember getting questions during the offseason like, hey, I'm kind of desperate at tight end. What do you think of Taysom Hill? And I'm just like, no. And then, of course, in week one, he just comes out and destroys and just like, oh, man, I don't want to have to think about this. But no, Taysom Hill is not for real. He had 81 yards rushing. He's a tight end, 81 yards rushing with a touchdown on 4 carries. A lot of that came on a 57-yard run. The thing is, he had only 1 target, which he turned into 2 yards receiving. He played on just 16 of 61 snaps, ran just 4 routes. He's a gadget player. You know, like, you don't want to pick up a guy and put him in your tight end slot if he is a gadget player. Like, he's not even the number one tight end within his own offense. That was Juwan Johnson, who played 45 snaps, around 32 routes on 40 dropbacks. He's the number one in the offense, not Taysom Hill. So let someone else pick up Taysom Hill. And if you happen to have him in best ball, like, congratulations. This was a great week for you. You probably shouldn't count on it moving forward.
I have him in a dynasty league where I just, like, had to make a pick in the 19th round on day, like, 17 of a slow draft. And, of course, obviously I didn't start him or anything. Before we move on with today's show, I'd like to take a moment to talk about Flex Fantasy. After all the research and countless drafts, we're 1 week into the 2022 season, and your team is either off to a great start or a regrettable one. But why stop at just the leagues you're already in? Prove just how good your teams are by joining Flex Fantasy and competing against other teams not in your league. You can compete in PPR or best ball challenges with the exact same team you already have. Join now at flex.fan/pros and show what you and your teams are made of. That's flex.fan/pros. Let's move into the rest of the slate here now that we're through with the headlines. We talked a little bit about Taysom Hill, but just looking at that Saints-Falcon game as well, what else stuck out to you?
Yeah, Cordarrelle Patterson, who had a great year last year, got the starter kind of treatment in the preseason by barely playing any at all, and had a tough matchup going against the Saints team that shut him down last year, especially on the running game. And then, man, he came out and looked good as a runner. 22 carries, 120 yards, and a touchdown. Also had 16 yards receiving. Really like the way he looked. Let's keep an eye on Kyle Pitts. He didn't have a good stat line, but he did have a team high 7 targets. So, you know, still pretty optimistic on him. And then Michael Thomas, he ran 33 routes on 40 dropbacks, even though he was out there only half the time. So they were using him very much as a pass game specialist. He had a team high 8 targets, those 2 touchdowns on 57 yards receiving. He looked quite a bit like the old Michael Thomas. So we're going to have to move him up the ranks.
Yeah, we said on Friday's show, which everybody should check out every week, by the way, our matchup preview show going into each weekend, that Kyle Pitts was very likely to not have a great week. So even if you invested high draft capital in him, this was a particularly tough matchup. Don't panic. There's no reason to think that he won't be a featured part of this offense going forward. Browns at Panthers, Christian McCaffrey was saved by a touchdown late, but he did not look good early.
Yeah, so Christian McCaffrey, as you mentioned, the touchdown, but otherwise it was bad. 10 carries for 33 yards and only 4 targets, which he turned into 24 yards receiving. That's not what you want to see, but, you know, hey, I think you go back to the well. Obviously, if you have him, you're starting him next week, so you keep on going with that. Robbie Anderson looked pretty good. Team high 8 targets, which he turned into 102 yards and a touchdown. Pain, maximal pain for DJ Moore investors. Hopefully Moore ends up becoming the number one receiver in that offense. Nick Chubb on the other side looked good. 22 carries, 141 yards. Of course, though, no rushing touchdowns because the touchdowns went to Kareem Hunt, on the ground and through the air, 70 yards, 11 carries, four targets. So, you know, they're in midseason form with both of these guys cannibalizing each other.
Yeah, on the one hand, it's frustrating. On the other hand, at least you can start both because they'll both be somewhat productive for you. Just scale 1 to 10 panic meter on David Njoku.
Four. I don't know. I'm not going to go too far, but it was painful. It was painful that he wasn't actually doing anything.
I don't want to take any time on 49ers at Bears because they are playing in a monsoon. There's really not much to take away from that game. I will just mention Deebo Samuel had 8 rushes and a rushing touchdown, so it looks like he's still primed to be involved in that same type of role we saw last offseason. Let's move on to the game of the day, Steelers at Bengals. When I was putting down the notes, I wrote fantasy takeaway, kickers stink.
Yeah. All right. So this game went to overtime, so you can't put all that much weight on the raw statistics, but Joe Mixon, 27 carries and 9 targets. Like, that guy is getting used. He turned that into 145 yards. It wasn't highly efficient, but 145 yards, even though the Bengals never led in that game. So that was pretty impressive. He's obviously going to be used as the motor within that offense when they're not throwing into Ja'Marr Chase.
The other thing I want to mention from that game is just that Najee Harris wasn't very efficient when he was in the game, just 2.3 yards per carry before he left again late in the fourth quarter with that foot injury. Eagles at Lions, very high scoring game. AJ Brown, 10 catches, 155 yards, pretty good Philly debut.
Yeah, I think he had 13 targets, 15 targets. I mean, he got that on a run heavy team, 13 targets on a run heavy team. I mean, he's a top 10 option in fantasy. I think most people had him as kind of like at the, you know, the bottom end of top 10 or like just outside like wide receiver one territory. Like, no, every week he needs to be firmly in that territory in terms of like skill talent. He's top 5 at the position. The question has always been, is he going to get the opportunity that's commensurate with his talent? And I think we're going to start to see that in Philadelphia. And it's wonderful. Like, we might need to consistently start ranking him in the top 6.
Yeah, I certainly wasn't fading AJ Brown in the preseason, but I wasn't getting him in a lot of drafts because I was worried. Again, we already knew he had the talent in Tennessee. He goes to Philly. Also a run-heavy offense nominally, so I was worried that we weren't going to see that usage that we want to see. He was clearly Hurts' favorite target. Hurts also had 90 rushing yards and a rushing touchdown, so very good fantasy day there. And Miles Sanders, our long national nightmare is over. He scored a touchdown.
That was awesome. Good for him for dunking on everyone.
Dunking on everyone, particularly our good friend Mike Mayer.
Yeah.
Next up, Colts at Texans. Damian Pierce, the darling of the preseason, didn't look like it today.
This was such a letdown. Maybe this is why we should never get excited about slowish fourth round running backs on mediocre offenses who never had even 1,000 yards in college. Just saying. But I bought the hype too. Like, I fell into it. But yeah, Damian Pierce had 11 carries for 33 yards, one target, which he turned into 6 yards. He was outplayed by Rex Burkhead, who has to be nearing his 40s at this point. Pretty demoralizing performance, but it's whatever. It's a running back on the Texans. On the other side, Michael Pittman, wide receiver one season is in full effect, had 13 targets, granted overtime game, but still 13 targets, which he leveraged into 121 yards and a touchdown. He is firmly in the top 12.
Yeah, Pittman was a breakout everybody called, so take your victory laps now. Rex Burkhead out-touched Damian Pierce 19-12, combining both carries and catches, so that was a little discouraging. You can keep this quick, Friedman, but if you are tight end needy, how much fab are you spending on O.J. Howard?
None. No, I mean, you know, I don't think you can count on. I'm going to need to look to see how many snaps. I'll look at the PFF data to see how many snaps he actually played, how many routes he actually ran. But I don't think this is something that like we should consistently count on unless when we dig into the data, he was actually out there every snap and running every route.
Before we move on with the show, I'd like to take a moment to talk about Air Medcare Network. Now, in fantasy football, we do everything we possibly can to be prepared for any scenario, but sometimes the unexpected still happens. And when it happens in our game, we can chalk it up to bad luck and move on to the next week. But when emergency strikes in real life, that's the scary stuff. And it's why I want to make sure you are fully prepared with Air Medcare Network. When medical emergencies inevitably pop up, Air Medcare Network gives members the absolute best possible air transport services to the nearest hospital with zero cost out of pocket. It's less than $100 a year to cover your entire family, and frankly, what wouldn't you pay for the peace of mind of knowing that no matter what happens, you are mere minutes away from the best possible care? Whether you're an adventurous family always toeing the line, or an indoors family who prefers to take it easy, emergencies can and will find you. Be prepared with Air Medcare Network, who is currently offering our listeners a $50 gift card with your new membership. Just visit airmedcare.com/fantasypros and use offer code FANTASYPROS for the peace of mind no one should live without. Patriots at Dolphins. Tyreek had 12 targets. Waddle had 5. He was next highest, so Tyreek blew everybody out of the water there. No pun intended with the Dolphins. Is that a cause for concern for Waddle managers?
That pun is a cause
for concern for this podcast.
It's a legit cause for concern. I mean, Waddle looked talented when he was out there. You know, he produced on his targets, got the touchdown, looked explosive. But that split needs to be monitored. You know, like Tyreek Hill was the clear number one option within that offense. You know, there was a lot of pessimism entering the season about Jalen Waddle. And even though he had a good performance and saved it with a touchdown, I don't think the usage indicates that those concerns were unwarranted.
We already talked about the Patriots offense when we touched on Mac Jones. So let's move to Ravens at Jets. Again, looking at some young running backs here, Breece Hall, only 6 carries. He did have 10 targets in the passing game. Michael Carter had 10 rushes and 9 targets. We know that Joe Flacco does like to check down a lot when he's under pressure, which he was during the course of the day. Again, sort of what's your concern level on Hall, or are you sort of staying away from this backfield for the time
being? I'm staying away from the backfield. I have no concern about these guys because I'm not thinking about them. In the player prop market, they will probably be guys that I look to bet against.
That's fair. On the Ravens side, Lamar only had 213 yards. He did throw 3 touchdowns. The interesting thing to me was that they were all deep passes. They lost Hollywood Brown this season, but he didn't seem to be afraid to throw deep to Devin Duvernay, who had 2 surprising touchdowns, or to throw deep to Rashad Bateman, who had a beautiful 55-yard touchdown catch. And then, like we said before, nothing doing from the Ravens running game at all. That seems like a total stay away to me, at least until J.K. Dobbins or maybe Gus Edwards is back. The last game of the early slate, Jaguars at Commanders. Carson Wentz threw for 4 touchdowns, 300 yards. He did have the 2 picks. And as I've said before, Carson Wentz gets a little more hate than maybe he should because the picks are so comically bad. They did happen. They do still take away from your points, but he did throw 4 touchdowns, which I thought was pretty impressive.
Yeah, I mean, good for him for getting the revenge against former head coach Doug Peterson. And I mean, Jahan Dotson looked good. I mean, he was out-targeted by Curtis Samuel, who had 11 targets. That was surprising. Didn't see that coming. Yeah, I mean, when Curtis is healthy, he's, you know, a fantastic player, hardly ever healthy. But Jahan Dotson, he out-snapped him. He was out there on the field running all the routes and had 4 targets, which he turned into 40 yards, 2 touchdowns. Looking pretty good for a rookie. I think out of all the rookies who played this week, out of the wide receivers, at least, looked like the best one out there.
I agree with that. Did Antonio Gibson's like very heavy workload today, did that sort of change how you will feel about him once Brian Robinson returns?
Not really. And honestly, I mean, I mentioned, you know, trading DeAndre Swift, looking to trade him high. I think you could maybe try to do the same thing with Antonio Gibson because he was still splitting snaps with JD McKissick. But yeah, I mean, he looked great. 14 carries, 8 targets. So he was used in a more well-rounded fashion, and he had 130 yards as a result of that. But I would probably still try to trade him high.
Bad day for Travis Etienne. Good day for Christian Kirk. Didn't get the touchdown, but 117 yards. Pretty clearly Trevor Lawrence's top target. Looking at the afternoon slate, a surprising win by the Giants when they went for 2 late to take down the Titans. Again, talking on Friday, we said this was a pretty ugly game.
Yeah, I love it. You know, actually, on the BP live stream that we did earlier today, Pat Fitzmaurice and I put together a moneyline dog parlay. I threw in the Texans at 3-1, and Fitz threw in the Giants at 2-1, and that hit. So that cashed at 11-1. So we're off to a good start. And I mean, the Giants brought it home in the end. And Saquon Barkley, the boy is back. I mean, he looked good. 18 carries, 164 yards and a touchdown, 7 targets. He turned that into 6 receptions for 30 yards. One of the best fantasy performances and one of the best, like, sort of like real life and like feel good performances of like, yes, like he is still Saquon. So love seeing that from him. And then, you know, Derrick Henry, Didn't look all that great, but he had 21 carries. Like, that's what we care about the most, is he getting the volume. So this wasn't a great performance, but as long as he's getting the carries, at some point, that's going to turn into a monster performance.
Do you think this was more Saquon being healthy, or more Saquon and what we're going to see in his role in Brian Daboll's offense?
I think it's a combination of both. And that offensive line is improved with their offense, with their tackles in particular. So like, that helps the running game. So I think it's just a combination of everything. Saquon's healthy, the offensive line is better, and the scheme is probably better just by virtue of the fact that it's not Jason Garrett.
Chiefs at Cardinals. This might be a Patrick Mahomes scorched earth season.
Yeah, we had 3 days of Josh Allen MVP, and then Patrick Mahomes came in and poured water all over that. Amazing 30 of 39 performance, 360 yards, 5 touchdowns, and like, it looked easy. Like, it looked so easy. And you could tell, like, they had an offseason to figure out how they were going to replace Tyreek Hill. And granted, they were going against a Cardinals team that was missing both of its edge rushers from last year. And pretty wounded in the secondary. So you can understand, like, hey, we shouldn't overreact to this. We should expect the Chiefs to look good given the matchup. But they didn't just look good. They looked great. And the ball was going to everyone in the offense, not just Kelce, not just Juju. Everyone was getting in on the action. Loved this version of Patrick Mahomes.
There was some talk in the offseason that maybe without having Tyreek on the field, he'll spread the ball out more. The offense actually could look even better. It certainly looks better today. And then on the Cardinals side, we didn't quite see that wide receiver one performance out of Hollywood Brown. He did get the touchdown, of course. We saw some garbage time work from Kyler. Greg Dortch, wide receiver one in Arizona.
I mean, it's amazing. 9 targets, which he turned into 7 receptions for 63 yards. Like, that's not nothing. It makes me think of Anton Wesley, you know, who had 3 touchdowns in a 2-game stretch late in the year last year in relief for DeAndre Hopkins. Like, sometimes we'll just put a guy out there and then that guy ends up getting targets and producing. I'm not expecting Greg Dortch to end up being the number one receiver in this offense for the next 5 weeks, but he's going to be out there running routes, and within an offense that throws as much as the Cardinals do, he's someone who should probably be rostered.
Raiders at Chargers, a repeat of that incredible game to end last year's regular season. We talked about Justin Jefferson already. We mentioned what Cooper Kupp did on Thursday. Stephon Diggs also looked great on Thursday. Davante Adams also reminding people that he is here and one of the best receivers in football.
This was amazing. I was not expecting this at all. I mean, I thought Davante Adams would look good, you know, like himself, but like the version of him placed into a lesser offense. And so not getting the ball as much, having to compete with Darren Waller and Hunter Renfro for targets. I mean, sure, maybe he was competing with them, but he totally out-competed them. 17 targets for 141 yards and a touchdown. Amazing performance. Like, this was a vintage Davante Adams with Aaron Rodgers kind of stat line. So amazing performance.
Yeah, he had more targets than the next 5 receivers in Vegas did combined. He had 17. They only threw 37 passes for the day. So he almost had more than every other receiver combined for Vegas. Herbert looked awesome. Gerald Everett, for those who took a swing on him at tight end, paid off with the touchdown. We already mentioned Mike Williams did nothing. Is there anything else from the Chargers offense that stuck out to you?
I mean, would have liked to see more from Austin Eckler. So that's something to monitor, but I'm not getting too worried about that, but that has my attention.
And then just lastly on the Packers and Vikings, because we already talked about Rodgers and Jefferson, AJ Dillon and Aaron Jones, and you talked about how this is sort of a running back game. This looks like a really split backfield.
Yeah, this was bad. Very much a split backfield. Dillon had 10 carries, 6 targets. Aaron Jones, 5 carries, 5 targets. I would have liked to have seen Jones getting more of the work, frankly, but Dillon is a great player, man. This is bad for both, especially in an offense that is missing its 2 tackles. And with John running out with the concussion, that offensive line is really bad. Their wide receivers aren't giving them any help. So, you have to keep on playing them. If you have them, you expect this offense to bounce back at some point, but you don't feel good about it in week 2.
Yeah, a couple bad drops from Christian Watson. Do you think that there's a pretty real chance that both Dillon and Jones are top 3 on this team in targets?
not both of them, maybe one of them. At some point, you know, Alan Lazard comes back and starts getting targets. And let's say, you know, Dobbs at some point ends up, you know, asserting himself in that offense and getting more targets. Tonyan is there, but it's bad to where like they could be maybe both in the top four, or like you put their targets together and they're more than all of the wide receivers, not all, but any of the wide receivers, you know, like you could see that happening.
We haven't watched enough football today, so we need to go watch Tampa Bay and Dallas. I won't make you stay here for a full half hour with just me. Like I said, Freeman, thank you so much for today's show. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Like I said, we will be back here every Sunday night recapping all the injuries and fantasy-relevant news from that day's slate. So stick with us all season long, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Fantasy Pros Football Podcast. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Fantasy Pros, and subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/fantasypros.
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.
Our kids have said to us since we moved to Minnesota, we are far more active than we've ever been anywhere else we've ever lived.
Moving to Minnesota opened up a lot of doors for us.
Just this overall sense of community, of values that, you know, Minnesotans have.
It's a real accepting, loving community, especially with two young kids.
See what makes Minnesota the star of the North. New residents share why they love calling it home at exploreminnesota.com/live.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases, and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.